Again, I just want to thank everybody for participating. There's really been a lot going on with coronavirus. I know it's been difficult and stressful, but I also know that a lot of you folks have just done some tremendous work in developing guidance for the industry. I personally really appreciate the work and the things that have been put out from many of your organizations. I think it's very helpful. I just wanted to give a brief update about some of the things that are going on at NIOSH. I think you all know we're part of the CDC, so we are getting pulled into all sorts of different COVID activities. Liz Garza, who's part of this office, was deployed to Africa for a month and a half, came back for a couple of weeks, and got deployed for COVID. So she's kind of doing several different jobs at the same time. And we've got quite a few people really across the Institute that are doing that. You know, Dr. Howard has made it really clear that this is our number one priority in trying to help businesses get back to operating sort of in a normal mode, although, you know, it's going to obviously take a while for that. But and we've had a tremendous amount of different things going on. There's guidance on the CDC website that's general guidance for businesses that would apply to construction. But on top of that, we have some draft guidance going through the clearance process that should be getting released fairly soon. It has been shared with several folks on the council, and we appreciate the input we've gotten on some of the initial drafts. We've been extremely busy. In addition to, you know, things related to construction, we've played a major role in the whole meatpacking industry and developing guidance for meatpacking. They've had a lot of issues and problems there with folks getting sick. They're working in close proximity and in some cases not wearing proper protection. So we've been working with them. We've actually had field teams go out and do evaluations on site. We're also getting a lot of requests for different webinars. And so Dr. Howard has done some webinars with the iron workers. He did one several weeks ago with CPWR. Some of you may have been on that. We did something earlier this morning with the National Institute of Building Sciences. And we recently got a request from ASSP to do a webinar specific to construction that I wanted to talk about later on in our call today. The last thing I just wanted to mention is that there are a lot of our partners, besides folks that are on the call here today, but groups like AIHA, some of the companies. I know Willis Towers Watson's been doing some good things with Mike Fredabel and others. But again, there's just a tremendous amount of good work going on in this area. We want to sort of keep that going, and then also try to figure out what our council can do to sort of move the ball forward in this area. So that's just kind of a brief update of what's been happening on COVID. Last thing I want to mention, just before I forget, is I wanted to say thank you to the folks that were part of the Struck By work group, and that includes Brad Sant and Mike Mills and Eileen Beatty, Howard Marks, Alan, for all the work they did leading up to the virtual stand down from a couple weeks ago. I'm assuming probably a lot of you were, and also I don't want to forget Travis. I'm seeing Travis right here in the middle of my screen, but Travis did a great job as part of the panel. So I want to just thank everybody that was involved in that, because I thought it was a really super event under difficult circumstances. So thanks to everybody that was involved in that. And with that, I'll go ahead and turn things over to Chris. She was going to give an update on some of the things that CPWR has been involved in as the National Construction Center.
Well, thanks, Scott. And I'm going to keep this brief since we have, you know, we just want to spend an hour here and we really want to hear from folks on the sector council. We have been continuously updating guidance we're putting out. We've we did the webinar with Dr. Howard, and that's recorded and available on YouTube through our YouTube channel and also through CPWR's main page. Please take a look at that if you haven't seen it. Don Ellisberg mentioned that there was an interesting webinar put on by Willis Towers Watson yesterday. I was able to tune into it as well, and I'm hoping that Mr. Fredabel is able to join us.
What's that?
They're doing some really good things.
I'm sorry.
I'd like to hear about it. And I'm hearing some folks talking, so I may mute you through the Zoom app if there's noise coming out of your little box. It's not personal. But we definitely want to hear from you when it when you have something to share. So you may be on mute if you're trying to speak. The main thing I wanted to cover was the establishment of a clearinghouse. Just in the last week, we've been able to stand up a CPWR construction COVID-19 clearinghouse. And Eileen Beatty has been our leader in this, our R2P director, and has agreed to give us a top level overview of the clearinghouse and how we hope it's helpful and what we're looking for as far as folks to help us populate that clearinghouse with information that the construction industry as a whole can use and can find and can be able to supplement the efforts that they are doing to address COVID-19 on their job sites, and really learning from people on the phone here about what works, what doesn't work, and things that are innovative and new ways to deal with this. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Eileen.
Thanks, Chris. I'm going to try and share my screen right now. So can everyone see my see the screen? Whoops, you're seeing a snipping tool, so that won't work. I apologize. Let me try one more time.
We're all learning the technology.
And I'm challenged on the best of occasions. So about a week ago, a little over a week ago, Chris asked Jessica Bunting, Bill Wright, and myself to put our heads together and come up with some kind of a clearinghouse for the construction industry, and this is the result. I'm going to quickly just walk through the site. You can access it at covid.lcosh.org. It's live. It went out in our newsletter yesterday with a link to it. So I'll just walk through the site. On the homepage, there's just a description, a little background on the site, and a search box. We have two boxes here in the lower corner where we'll feature different resources and we'll rotate them from time to time. We have 10 resource categories which you can access, and you'll see there's a number next to each one, and it shows how many items we've already posted in those categories. And then there's the news related information section, and we're going to limit how many of those appear on this homepage, but there are more items within the site. The About section basically just gives background on who CPWR is and how this site came about. And you'll notice there's a link down here to COVID-19@CPWR.com where you can either send us questions, let us know if there's something that's out of date on the site, or provide us with information that should be added to the site. The news and information section, we're going to limit this to five items that will appear at one time, and then everything else beyond five will end up in this news and related information archive. We're not going to put every news item out there that comes out about COVID because many of them are redundant, but we're going to put up things that we feel are either unique or informative for the industry. The resource categories, as I mentioned, there are 10 different categories. If we go to, for example, about the virus, see that you can always get to the other resource categories on every page. And each page has a search button on it as well. So if I were to search in NIOSH, all the materials that we have on NIOSH would show up. So that's essentially our site, and you can always just go back to the homepage by clicking on this link, and our hope is that people will send us information that we can then post to these different categories on the sites. And I'll just run through the different categories. There's About the Virus, Guidance on Workplace Practices, which are basically things, how are people dealing with things like hand washing stations on job sites. Safety in Action is one we'd like to hear specifically from the field, examples of creative ways that they're implementing the safety protocols that CDC and others have put out. There's training resources, you know, videos, presentations, toolbox talks, employer recommendations and requirements, such as the NEPTU and CPWR guidelines and standards. And then there's the state and local requirements, things that are coming out from states and localities that impact the construction industry, research findings, studies, data, and reports that come out, personal protective equipment, about the use and information that NIOSH, a lot of it is information that NIOSH has put out about N95s and other types of respirators, but that's where this would be housed. Mental health resources related to use of opioids or suicide during this time, and then webcasts, podcasts, and social media, where like the webinar with Dr. Howard is housed, any podcasts that are done, and any kind of social media resources such as infographics. Some things are placed in more than one category. If they, for example, if there was something for social media like an infographic that could also be used for training. So that's a really quick overview of what we pulled together and how it functions.
Well, thanks, Eileen. And the next thing on the agenda, which I did post in the chat section, if you would like to see what we're planning to cover. We've gotten through the first two things on the agenda. And the next thing that Scott and I were hoping we could do is hear from sector council members. It's pretty much an open forum. What's going on? What are you finding that's working? What are some challenges? And with that, please remember, if you're going to speak, take yourself off mute if you're on mute. And I don't think there's any order to it, so just you're welcome to.
Chris, this is Wes with NECA. One of the quick questions I just want to kind of post, I like the information here that's being presented, as well as the listing of the state and local requirements. I mean, some of the challenges that we have in the construction industry is like the state of Nevada has issued Nevada OSHA guidance that is particular to construction. And it's my understanding they're even going so far as to write some citations to some of the employers for the not maintaining spatial separation and social distancing and all. And so it really is important. And I see that it's not located right now on the state information, because you have Washington, you have Pennsylvania, but I would encourage you and encourage everyone else that as this information becomes available, that we share it with everybody, because as each one of the states are going to be developing their own guidance, especially with opening up job sites, we need to be on top of that information so that in addition to any training that we do with our employees, that we have the latest information in the state guidelines and requirements. So thank you very much for putting this together. I think it's a beneficial tool for everybody.
Yeah, and I do remember hearing about the Nevada guidelines, but we don't have them, you're right. So if you have them handy, you can just shoot them to us and we'll get them posted as soon as possible. Likewise, other state guidance that you see coming out from governor's office or municipalities, that's the exact kind of stuff we want to put on here so that it's available, and do our best to keep it up to date and replace it if it's replaced at the state level.
Thank you, Chris and Eileen.
So to answer your question, Chris, this is Michael Mills. Also, I invited Richard Newton, who's our Director of Industrial Hygiene. He manages our Industrial Hygiene Lab, as well as the 40 or so industrial hygienists that we have working for Liberty Mutual. But to answer your question, we've been publishing some of our thoughts on the COVID virus and trying to help customers address the issue through our, we have a viewpoint article series. Currently, I published an article on how to shut down a project, more from the perspective of doing a risk assessment / pre-planning. And then probably in the next day, I'll have a guide on how to restart your operations. Did you want to add anything, Richard? Or? Okay.
Well, that's the exact type of thing we'd love to be able to post if we have your permission to post it, Mike. So we're eager for it.
Hey, this is Rob from NHB. I just wanted to throw out a couple of things that might be useful. Our Construction Industry Safety Coalition put together an exposure prevention preparedness and response plan for construction. There's a lot of really good information. It's in both English and Spanish. I think it's probably 10 to 12, maybe 14 pages now, because it's been revised once to really deal with, you know, sort of emerging issues as this whole emergency sort of evolves. We talk about now face coverings, taking temperatures on the job site. And we think it's actually a really good resource. It's already available on our coalition website. I'll ask our construction folks who are also in the coalition if we can share that with you. I think that would actually be a good resource for the construction industry. I don't know if there's anything already posted out there, but like I said, we spent an awful lot of time and effort to sort of get the construction industry going in the same direction. And we put this together, 2 months ago. And so obviously that's something that we might be able to offer. The other thing is that NHB has a couple of specific things that we've done. We've been more than happy to share them with you. We've put together some job site safety posters that use pictograms, and it's, the top 10 things, very similar to what OSHA has put out. But I think the really good thing is it's the pictograms that we've used. That's in both English and Spanish. That can be posted to the job site or handed out. And our most latest information, and I think we could actually share this with you all as well. We did an English and Spanish video on the best safety practices for COVID-19. We went out to a job site one afternoon, captured all this footage of guys wearing face coverings, hand washing stations, social distancing, and we rapidly put this together in less than 2 weeks. And it's a pretty good resource, at least for the home building industry, we think. And like I said, those are already posted to our website and available on YouTube as well. I mean, we'd be more than happy to share those if you all are interested.
Well, Rob, I appreciate that. And, we're able to link to your materials as well. It's not necessarily reposting the entire package or document. I mean, as far as we're not like, it's not one or the other. So okay. If there are links that you think should be linked from the clearinghouse, we'd really love to see them and post them if we can. So
okay.
Have the right permission.
And just one other thought as well on this. I know that this call is primarily geared towards, the whole COVID-19 issue. I have a strange feeling that we've been spending so much time on this, and I think it's a good thing for everybody to be focused on safety. We got our entire industry to stand down for coronavirus a couple of weeks ago. I'm fearful that this is overtaking maybe some other safety issues that are out there on job sites. And I don't know if we could have a conversation about that, what other folks are doing. Cause I just think this is sucking all the oxygen for safety away from other, known issues, whether that's, fall protection, ladder use, other things that are out there. I'm not sure if this is the proper time to sort of have that conversation, but I mean, I'm really interested in how folks are sort of pivoting from this and still maintaining, how we're working on this issue, but also wrapping in the other safety issues that this sector council has worked on for years and years.
I think that's a really good point, Rob. I know I've heard in some groups I've talked with about just the fact that folks are wearing face coverings or respirators and things like that, and that there's a potential that use of that could create other hazards, that are very, very serious. So I don't think there's any doubt that there's definitely other elements to this whole thing beyond the COVID.
And I just reposted the agenda in the chat because I was told that not everybody could see it, so it should hopefully in there now. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'll jump into here. Hey, it's Travis. Good afternoon, everybody. A lot of our stuff's already up there. We shared that earlier with you guys, and we just shared, I think my communications guy, Nick Fox, just reached out to Eileen earlier this afternoon with some new stuff. for people that have been on our site, we just updated 3 or 4 new materials in the last 2 days. A lot about return to work, a lot about screening, and there's an example, you know, safety and health program, written program up there. You can take and put your stuff up there. So if you haven't been there in a, you know, 3 days, you might want to go check it out. And that's been communicated for this website. I really commend you for doing this clearinghouse. I think it needed to be done by somebody. Also, another thing out there, I'm heavily involved with the National Safety Council. They're doing a big lift on return to work with the SAFER. It's called SAFER, and it's all about returning to work. And they got some really large companies on there that have from all over the world that have already faced COVID-19. And, you know, they might have some good practices from there. I'll be happy to be that conduit between. I think NIOSH is already on there. AIHA is on there. Also, AIHA has a lot of great resources. They have a website that's got some specific stuff for different industries on there that may already be on here. I haven't dug in yet. So, but AIHA's got good stuff. We got good stuff. The home builders have done some great work. It's good to see everybody working together. And then the biggest challenge I've found personally, as we try to deal with this every day, is keeping it up to date. Somebody, I think Chris or somebody mentioned that earlier. It's, you know, just when CDC, you know, the other night came out with changing it from 7 to 10 days for returning back after being infected, you know, after being in self-isolation at home. That's a big difference for the construction industry when you're trying to bring people back to work. So whoever's in charge of staying in touch with the updates from the CDC as it's fluid and changes, good luck. And we all got to keep each other on the same page. So thank you.
Hey, Travis, along those same lines, you mentioned the good work that AIHA is doing, but there's also some good things on ASSP's website, yep, including a number of webinars they've done. And I've been interacting with them this week, and they're interested in doing having a webinar on construction. Okay. So I was thinking about possibly trying to set up a panel. So if any of you folks are interested in getting involved in a ASSP webinar as part of a panel on construction and COVID, send me an email. And we could try to figure out how that might work.
Okay.
Yeah, Scott, this is Carl Heinlein. I've been working with Brad Giles, trying to get the ASSP to do a webinar here sooner than later on the construction. So certainly the folks that are on the call today would be perfect candidates to share some of their information. I haven't dug through everything that's on the site right now. You know, right now, just our own internal site at ACIG, we have 140 documents, and it seems like we're adding more every day. I was on a call earlier today that the counties around San Francisco, plus the city of San Francisco, is starting to put some really pretty interesting, believe it at that, requirements in place. So if anyone's on the phone that's working out on the West Coast, please keep a close eye out on that. Also hearing the state of North Carolina is taking a look at how they want to address workers' comp and COVID, so something to take a look at as well. And last but not least, have we posted the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's website for COVID? Because they seem like they've got kind of a Gantt chart out there about what each state's COVID rules and regulations are. Pretty good resource. If we don't have that up there, I'd be glad to share that.
Please do. Carl.
Thanks for that update, Carl.
Everybody. Hi, this is Paul with AGC in Michigan. And Eileen, I just sent you over some stuff. Michigan just released some instructions or direction for guidance on construction projects. And today was our first day back. I'm already, the problem we're dealing with is testing sites. Here, because I've handled multiple calls today where people were not social distancing over the weekend with family members, and we had family members that came down with symptoms and were tested positive, and these people had been at work today and didn't find out until this afternoon. And so we're scrambling trying to find testing sites that will do the essential personnel that are back to work now. Very quickly. So that's one of the challenges we're facing right now.
Thank you for sending that Michigan information in. It's a big challenge.
I'll
just jump in real quick. I'll tell you one of the things that that I'm seeing on road construction crews, and there are different regulations in different states. Like, for example, I know Washington State requires folks to wear goggles and face coverings. Some of the folks that have are working in elevated temperatures are starting to have a little bit of difficulty with regards to steaming of the goggles and you know, uncomfortableness because they're not used to wearing those kind of face coverings. Just wanted to point that out.
And I think that, you know, that's the kind of challenge that we're looking for the field to let us know where the solutions are. So I think it's really important to identify those, and for if collectively, if we can be on the lookout for some of the solutions to these challenges, that's exactly the kind of stuff I hope we can get into the clearinghouse, you know, tips and tricks and real short, short aids so that contractors can find them when they're facing similar challenges. Alan, did you want to offer?
Well, something? I was just going to ask if there's been any experience with contact tracing in construction where, you know, as a previous, the guy from Michigan AGC just mentioned that people coming to work having had contact with sick relatives. What's your experience with doing contact tracing among construction workers?
Well, this is Paul with Michigan, and that's what I spent most of my morning helping this contractor member do. It is going to be a challenge. That's going to be one of the biggest challenges because they were only notified by because they were told their that person's family member was told that they needed to contact everybody that they had been in touch with or had, you know, potential exposure in the last 7 days. So, yeah, that's going to be the next piece to the puzzle.
Yeah. This is Kevin Cannon with AGC. And along those lines of contact tracing, and maybe Scott and or Alan can help me better understand. Are we talking about just casual passing or prolonged exposure to this person?
This is John Johnson. Kevin, I think I can help with that. CDC guidance is within 6 feet for 10 minutes. That would be considered a direct exposure. And then they also have guidelines for indirect exposure. So they do have a contact tracing guide. It's basically you sit down, you go through the guide and list everybody. And it's a pretty laborious process, but it does work. And there's also contact tracing applications out there now that many companies have developed or in the process of developing. I don't think they're widely used in the construction industry yet, but some of our industry peers that we speak with on a weekly basis have trialed a few. And the one that's most promising is called Blackline, B-L-A-C-K-L-I-N-E. I think KBR is using that on a fairly large job right now, and they shared that with us yesterday. But it's typically within 6 feet for 10 minutes.
Well, and I get that. Well, I understand that part. But as far as the technology is concerned, I know the folks we've worked with at Triax also have a system for contact tracing. But, you know, I raised that question because I was on the CDC website and I've seen two different time frames, and 10 minutes has not been one of them. It's been either 15 minutes or 30 minutes. And I think, you know, trying to help contractors figure that out as far as that exposure time would be helpful.
Hey, Kevin, this is Scott. I mean, we can definitely get you an answer on that. We've got folks, you know, in our building, they're actually going out deploying to help with contact tracing. So we can, we'll talk to some of our docs and get back to you and really get back to the whole group about the way they're going about doing that.
What's the problem? Yeah, I was going to say, I think it would be helpful for the whole group so we're communicating a consistent message to all of our folks who might find themselves a positive case job sites. You know, is it this just casual passing or me saying hey to Rob for 5 minutes, 30 seconds as we're entering the job site?
Right, absolutely. Great point.
We've dealt with this, and we're working on contact tracing right now. We think it's, in, to the earlier point, the next return to work. So, so Kevin, I agree with you. There's a different numbers on there in the CDC recommendations. It's very dense. It can get confusing really quick. If you read on one of them, there's a 3 asterisk footnote, and that's probably where this is coming from. And there's a whole explanation. The 10 is like the safer side of it, for lack of a better word, and then 30 is like the race into the, I would call it the bottom, the least safe of it. They literally list 10 to 30, so 10 minutes to 30, and it's on one of their footnotes underneath the 3 asterisks. So it is very confusing. So I think the 10 minutes is erring on the side of safety. So 10 or above minutes for is what we're using for duration. And I do see where the 30 is coming from. That's the maximum. And then I think some people are just arbitrarily picking the 15 because it's above 10.
I think it's important, too, to remember that, I mean, there's plenty of job sites around the country. I mean, some in particular in Las Vegas and other areas that they have been practicing the social distancing and the facial coverings from day one. And that's the other thing to remember is that if this individual, even though he may be on the job site, if he's following the guidelines and he's wearing the facial coverings to prevent his exposure to others, that's the other barrier here that we have to consider. Right. You know, because he may not be exposing other people when, you know, he's wearing the proper stuff. So that's going to be the key here moving forward in the new normal, is ensuring that these workers are provided with, they come to work with, they have the facial coverings, and they're wearing them at all situations, especially at any of the congestion points where we go onto a stairwell or whatever. But as in passing, just like we just mentioned with this, you know, it's important, because if not, you can create a nightmare. And, you know, you're talking about the apps that basically – Apple has a free app out there. I mean, things that are coming up that people are going to be using. But it's important to remember that if the guidelines are set forth on the construction site and everybody's following those guidelines, that minimizes that effect of tracking and minimizes that effect of exposures. And but we have to enforce those particular guidelines.
Right. And that's a good point, Wes, whether or not, you know, they're wearing any type of barrier protection, you know, that, you know, potential or confirmed person. So Scott, if you could, you know, present that to the group as well in both scenarios. I mean, I would say, you know, without any type of covering over the face, whether it be face shield or face covering, face mask, respirator, whatever you want to put on your face, versus, you know, unprotected.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll talk to our folks about this and try to get more details out to everybody. Thanks for raising that, Kevin.
To chime in too, I mean, this is the exact kind of, you know, if there's apps or if there are tools, I've heard about, for lack of a better term, proximity warning devices that some contractors are putting on their job sites to warn workers when they're within a certain distance of other workers. That's the kind of stuff we'd like to collect and share so that other folks can learn about it.
Hey, Chris, it's Tom. You know, on that thing, one of the things I was looking into was a watch you can wear. I think it's a watch or a band, and it buzzes when you're 6 feet next to somebody else who's wearing one. So we've been, you know, because roofing crews have to, you know, so often I'm closer than 6 feet. So we've been trying to find, and I was looking into that. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I can't point you to it, and I wish I could. So we need to, need to have resources for folks who are looking for that type of tool.
Well, I think that's the other thing, key point here, especially where, you know, you just mentioned about the employees coming within 6 feet of one another. You know, there are situations on job sites and areas that, you know, I hate to say it, that there are situations where two employees have to be in close proximity. And that's where you have to look at what is a required PPE in those situations where they need to wear PPE for personal protection and not face coverings for, you know, exposure settings. Because, you know, we have workers that may be in buckets. We have workers that may be, you know, exposed, you know, dealing with heavy equipment, you know, and setting equipment that has to be done. So, you know, we have to look at those guidelines when we can't maintain the social spacing, the social separation, that, you know, what are the procedures, what are the guidelines that implement the proper PPE for those workers that may be working in close proximity on those sites? That's another condition that we have to look at.
We're looking at it all the time.
Hey, this is Rob again from NHB. Has anyone run into the situation in any of these state-run programs or state orders where they're limiting the maximum number of workers on the job site? I'm also a little concerned about that, where if you're limiting the crew, I can't remember if it's Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh has it.
Yeah, it basically says you can only have four people on a job site. I mean, they don't define what job site is. But my concern is if you have a framing crew that has five or six guys, you're now saying, hey, you can only have four guys. I think that that introduces other safety issues where you're normally, you know, you're used to working with a crew of six, and you're now saying you can't work with that crew. You need to, you know, limit it to only four individuals. Has anybody come across anything in that manner?
Pittsburgh has something based on square footage.
Yeah, so the whole state, I think it's residential you're talking about, Rob, for four. And I think when you get into commercial, it's based on square footage, like Kevin just said.
Okay.
It's the whole state of Pennsylvania.
Those seem somewhat arbitrary, and I'm thinking, you know, we know how to keep construction workers safe rather than coming up with some arbitrary either number of employees or based on square footage. It just doesn't seem like they've consulted the right folks on this. And maybe that's where, you know, the Construction Sector Council could also be a voice of reason here, saying, by the way, we don't think this is quite right. Like I said, I don't know if it's a big deal or not. It's just something that struck me as a little bit odd in a couple of these orders.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. And I mean, if we can try to identify different types of job tasks or different portions of the construction industry where there are problems like that, or there are tasks where, you know, you just absolutely have to have a significant number of people there to do the job and to do it safely. It'd be nice to be able to, sort of document those cases and then sort of be a voice as to, you know, why things should be differently or be handled differently, so we're not creating additional hazards for.
And Rob, for Pennsylvania, it is four persons on a job site. For residential, commercial, it is no more than four people on a job site of 200 square feet or less.
I mean, to me, those both sound quite arbitrary. I mean, and you know, like I said, I'm not sure what the solution is here, and I'm not sure how long that's going to prolong. If that's for the rest of the year, I think maybe that's where, you know, some better data and information might be better for the policymakers to say, by the way, this, you know, based on our experience, this doesn't make a lot of sense. There's a way to keep your 6 foot distance, or, you know, cover your face, or use PPE. I think there's other avenues out there that might be able to work as well.
All right. I think Don Ellisberg, you were raising your hand. You're unmuted now.
No, I didn't. I was probably raising my hand, but not to talk.
Okay. I'm going to mute you again.
What are folks doing for just, you know, hand washing on sites that are, you know, remote, or if there's not, if there's issues with water or other things? Is that, how much of an issue is that? I mean, I kind of got the impression it could be a significant issue in certain situations.
Hey, Scott, I'll tackle that real quick. It's Howard Marks again with NAPA. Very common to have water buckets or actual portable little stations that have like sanitizers on them, or and all kinds of different combinations of those, and they're pretty common at this point on road construction projects.
Yeah, and we're seeing, this is Tom Shanahan, we're seeing contractors being creative with that, with also ones that have foot pumps, so that you know your hands aren't getting on the spigots and stuff. So more and more, some are creating them and some are buying them. There are some that are really expensive that stay away from, but a number of our contractors are doing it. They're making them actually out of 5 gallon pails, buckets, you know.
Right.
And
right.
You know, if you had a picture of that, even if there were no workers there, and a 3-sentence description of it, that's exactly what we'd like to post, so that other contractors can say, hey, I can do hand washing and it only cost me $5.99 or something like that. And we actually are also interested in anyone who wants to volunteer cost issues that we would share through the through the clearinghouse if there's any financial information that folks who have implemented controls want to share. I think that's important to be really clear about. This system costs, you know, $50 to put together. I paid $8,000 to bring this onto my job site. I think it would be helpful for other contractors who are looking for ideas.
Chris, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'd like to offer a comment or two. I think it's important that if we as a group put something out there as a good solution, that it be properly vetted. Because like some of us are aware, not all respirators or N95 respirators are equal, for example. And, you know, not all wearables are work the way they should. So if we do put something out there, I think that the committee should have at least some method of taking a look at what's being put out there into the public realm. The other thing is, I also invited Lori Adams, who is our technical director of occupational health, and she sent me some notes, but I think that she indicated that when it comes to contact tracing, the CDC does offer some good guidelines, but there might be some regulations at the state or local level that they need to follow. And we would really encourage everyone to contact their occupational or consult with an occupational health consultant.
That's a good point, Mike. I think, you know, we in general, contact tracing is done by health departments, typically your local health department. So they're technically the ones who are going to be doing the official contact tracing for positives, at least under this scheme right now. That being said, even if they're notified, they may not be able to, you know, do contact tracing on the job site. So I think having some resources so that contractors can both identify other people who were potentially infected, but also to help the health department is something that's really important. And I wanted to react to something you said, but I saw that Anne-Marie Dale just unmuted herself. Anne-Marie, did you have something to share?
Yes. So I'm Anne-Marie Dale, for those of you who don't know me, from Washington University, and I'm conducting a very small study in interviewing some of the general contractors and subcontractors in St. Louis. And some points that you guys are making, I think, are really important about contact tracing. Most of the health departments that I'm hearing about are not prepared to do anything. And so I think the contractors are taking this on themselves. And I think, you know, for the industry, that's a very proactive thing to do. Even though you might not do it right, I think it's important for the industry that you at least make attempts at identifying anybody that has been exposed. I'm also working with our local health department because they're interested in moving into, you know, they're going to be moving into contact tracing. So this is coming down the way, and this could in fact become more of a problem for the industry, I think. I think it's important that whoever just said that made a comment that if you have a situation where there's a problem on your site, to contact either the local hospital or health department to find out if there's better advice that you should be following for your local area. The individuals that I've already conducted these interviews with, who are doing work all over the country, Pennsylvania seems to be the biggest problem, but there are rules all over the country that are quite different. So I think the point to find out what your local region is doing is very important. Some other things, Chris, I can send you some photos of some of the things that they've already developed with regard to hand sanitizer and hand washing stations and making their own. Another one that is some groups are using are touchless porta potty johns for opening, or foot operated. I think anytime we can go to foot operated Some of the groups are doing that. Another idea that came out, which I think was great, is doing some health screening through an app prior to entry. And that way, all of that information is logged in real time across a large number of sites, and it's being monitored at a central office. And then being reviewed by the super once the individuals come on site. I think the temperature testing is a little challenging for some of the contractors that I've spoken to. But anyway, those are some of the quick things I've learned so far in my week of interviewing contractors.
Thanks, Anne Marie.
This is Rob from NHP again. Hey, some of our members are trying to put together sort of temporary hand wash stations. They're using these utility sinks. One of the issues is, what do you do with the gray water? You just can't put that down the drain. You just can't let that flow, you know, on the job site. One unique aspect is that they found the sewer cleanout for the actual home that's under construction. They might be able to put it there. I do have a couple of pictures I just need to see that I took last week when I was out on the see if I can actually share those with you. I think that's a decent solution right now. The issue, I think, is when the weather turns colder. If this goes into, you know, November, December, January in northern climates, I mean, they're running a hose from one of the houses to this portable sink. I just don't know if that's going to cut it in the wintertime. But like I said, I think that I might be able to share a couple pictures with you on at least one solution.
No, I appreciate that. And I think that's the exact kind of thing we're looking for. And I'm going to probably have somebody follow back with you, even if you can't share the pictures, so that we can kind of just capture that idea and share it through the clearinghouse of how to set up a portable sink on a home building construction site, what some contractors have found works. Just an anecdote. But going back to something that Mike Mills said, that if this group puts anything out, I agree it needs to be vetted. Dr. Ernest, I may be jumping ahead, but you know, the next thing on our agenda we actually covered, because you mentioned the potential ASSP panel webinar, and for folks to get in touch with you if they were interested in participating. The last thing on our agenda, as we're coming up to the top of the hour, was to establish a work group. And I've already talked to at least one of you about potentially being a co-chair for this, but would you, is there a general consensus in the group that this is something we should have continuing discussion or conversation and a continuing work plan on?
Yeah, I think.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris, Mike.
I was going to say, if we don't, I can't think of any bigger exposure right now than this. Granted, you know, obviously there's ongoing job sites with fall exposures, et cetera. But, you know, if you want my help, I'll volunteer.
Thank you, Mike. Are you volunteering to chair it, to co-chair it?
Our internal staff, yes, I will co-chair it.
Thank you. And any other volunteers to co-chair this work group? Travis, I see your eyebrows raising.
Yeah, I was unmuting. Yeah, I'm fine. Okay. I'm happy to help out.
Thank you. So, I mean, one of the things that, as we struggled with the work group I was co-chairing, that really helped was to actually have a third co-chair. To help move it forward. Is there anyone else who would like to join Travis and Mike to try to help us focus on this as a construction sector council?
Hey, Chris, it's Liz Garza. I'm happy. I finished my COVID deployment tomorrow. I'm happy to help with this when I get back.
Well, hi, Liz. All right. So this, I think.
Hey, this is Brad. Yes,
I think I hear Brad Sant.
That's it.
Carl Heinlein would be glad to help out too.
Okay, I hear Brad. And who was the other person?
Carl Heinlein.
Carl, okay. So I've got a killer team here of five amazing leaders who have really volunteered to take the lead in this. And I think with that many leaders who all work together well, we're going to have some actual good outcomes for this. So I'm going to note in our notes that we're going to have that team lead and figure out if we can come up with a work plan to deal with COVID. The work plan is up to you. I mean, the ask that I have is to help populate this clearinghouse, and CPWR will help you and participate in the work group. So I'm going to call that task done, Scott, if that's okay with you.
No, that sounds great. I really appreciate folks stepping up and addressing this, because this is, obviously a huge priority for all of us. We've got a sort of a series of questions that we can, share with the group to sort of get some of the discussion going and some of the issues to kind of think about here. But, this is obviously a major, major issue that, it's going to be an issue for some time. So thank you.
All right. And Liz, we're really glad you're coming back from your deployment. We missed you. Maybe you'll be back a week before you get deployed again.
I hope not. This is my second COVID deployment, so hopefully I'll be back for a while.
All right.
Okay, with that, is there anything else that anybody wants to say? I just want to remind everybody, if any of you are interested in getting involved in a webinar, we've been asked to do a webinar for ASSP on construction. And I'm thinking about trying to set up a panel. So I know we've got a lot of obviously very knowledgeable folks on the call. If you're interested in doing that, please follow up with me in the next several days so we can firm that up. I guess if there's nothing else, we can go ahead and wrap up then. But I just want to thank all of you for all your work in this area and all you do for the construction industry. So thank you so much, and have a good rest of your day and rest of your week.
I just had a real quick question. Are there plans to have a conference or video call like this on a regular kind of basis at this point?
You know what? I was supposed to mention something about, you were all invited to our consortium and research to practice meeting in Cincinnati that we canceled for next month, but you are still all invited to our virtual meeting where we will be holding it via multiple platforms for relatively short durations at a time over the 2 days that we had originally scheduled. Eileen, I don't want to put you on the spot, but forgive me, I was hoping to mention that earlier and just remind folks that it's still on. And Eileen, if you're still there.
Sure, I am. I'm on. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, it's June 10th and 11th. We're gonna be sending out an update on the times. You'll be getting an interactive program at least a week or 2 weeks in advance, which will walk you through how you'll be able to participate in the program. As Chris said, we're gonna have shortened sessions. So we'll be presenting on new research. Scott and his team will be reporting on NIOSH and NORA activities. We have the chief economist from Dodge who's going to talk about the outlook for the construction industry. And then our work group, we're going to use a Zoom format to break into smaller groups and talk about the implications for construction moving forward. So if you haven't registered or if for some reason you didn't get our registration information, just let me know. We'll get it out to you. Okay.
Thanks, Eileen. And we do hope to see you all there. As far as the sector council coming together again, Scott and I are really open to it, and we can use this technology, a web platform or conference calls. Being that we're doing the R2P meeting that will include the sector council next month, we can contemplate doing a separate sector council brief check-in at that time, or we can do it a week or two after. It really depends on the feedback you guys give us for when you want to come together virtually, again, just as a sector council. So I guess please just let Scott and I know if there's needs to come together as a full sector council soon, or if the COVID work group decides that, you know, they're ready to bring something back for the full sector council, we can do that at any time. All right. I think we've gotten through our business.
Be well, everybody.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good rest of your day and rest of your week. Take care.